Chapter 16. The Choice. After getting the pebble back again and placing it in his money pouch, Makwa descended the hill under the noonday sun. He had to stop a few times to relieve himself, and in spite of his desire not to do so, he remembered Shimna's warning about the kupatha berries each time. He decided to listen to the girl next time she gave such a warning, but even the discomfort didn't dampen his spirits. There was a spring in his step, and he felt like the biggest man in the world because he knew Saruth would be proud of him. It also meant that he might learn greater things from Saruth, such as that amazing use of fire that he had witnessed the night before. As he made his way toward camp, he kept a sharp lookout for Zarmuths as well as an attentive ear for other things. Figuring out which way to go was easy. Going downhill in a direct line meant he was heading back. He played a game with himself as he crept back and looked for signs of his passing, as he had seen Shimna do. He wasn't as good a tracker as she was, but from time to time he found places where he'd been. There was a muddy boot print here, a broken sapling there, and a hole in a piece of water came where he had stopped to get a drink in the next place. The return trip was easy. He was going downhill, and that was part of why, but most of it was because he was in a good mood instead of a stinky one, and he felt happy about himself and the world around him, which was a feeling he both identified with and came to savor since he had begun his journey with Saruth. That seemed so long ago, but in truth it wasn't, he realized as he paused, looking over the landscape below while he thought about it. No longer was he a thief, but a fisherman, swimmer, tracker, and conqueror of the Trial of the Pebble. He couldn't keep from grinning. With greater speed and enjoyment of his little game, Makwa soon found himself almost at swamp level. The exposed rocks that poked up from the sand and mud told him that he was near the travelers again. And when he heard the sounds of hammers and people in the distance, he slowed to move in a shifty manner between the trees.
Makwa!
Shimna had been following him. She yelled again, calling his name and saying a few things he couldn't understand, no matter how hard he concentrated. He assumed that she was too far away for his talkie to sense her words. From the tone in the first word, he knew it was a question. The mental math on it wasn't hard. He looked at the scabbed cut she had given him earlier that day and decided that she deserved to be looking for a while. He would hide out until he could figure out just where she was so he could sneak up and scare the pee out of her. If he couldn't do that, he'd sneak back to Cooley and into the tent for a nap. That would serve her right. She kept calling, which was just what Makwa desired because her noisy nature helped him get closer undetected. He crept close enough to see her through the underbrush as she walked into a small clearing. It was a clearing he'd been in before, the one where he looked up through the trees and figured out that the elevation was increasing. He watched her kneel down and touch something that he guessed were his footprints, and then lift up some grass in her hand to sniff it. She shook her head.
Makwa!
He crept closer and got within 30 feet of the clearing to slip behind a tree. She turned in a slow circle to look around.
Makwa!
He looked into the polished surface of his spearhead and saw her facing away now. This was too perfect, and he was going to scare her so that she saw the lives of her ancestors flash before her eyes. That would not only even the score, but put him ahead. There was another sound beyond her, a soft crash of brush. She widened her stance as she perked her ears and stood with her slender form poised in the midday sunlight that beamed down over her. Makwa heard the sound, too, and assumed it was only branches falling from trees on the far side of the clearing. One of her ears tilted back, and she took half a step toward the sound. Makwa took full advantage of her misplaced attention and slipped behind a tree on the edge of the clearing, placing himself within 10 feet of her. He couldn't have planned it any better if he'd tried. He slid the head of his spear out at an angle and peered into it as she called his name again, this time with more worry in her voice. She took a few backward steps toward him. He bared his fangs as he prepared to jump out and frighten the life from the girl. Before he could, she screamed.
Wait, what?
He thought as he shifted his spearhead and saw a dark blur of movement entering the clearing from the other side. He saw the ebon face, red eyes, and white fangs of his most wicked nightmare. There was a wailing screech that chilled his blood and made his whole pelt stand on end. With a terrified feminine scream, Shimna fled for her life. He pulled the spear back, looked around the tree, and felt the chill in his blood sink into his gut as the Fazuga advanced and hurled a stick that caught Shimna in the back of her head. She stumbled under the blow so that she stopped before another tree some 10 feet down the edge from Makwa. Her hand went to her head, and she drew it away with blood on it as her eyes met his.
Makwa?
Makwa thought to go get help and looked down as he considered his options. His heart pounded in his ears while his fear became so thick that he could smell it. That Fazuga was the most frightening thing he could imagine, and he could imagine quite a lot. He should run from it. Everything in him screamed for him to run from it. What could he do but get help? Another scream from Shemna brought his eyes upward and snapped him back into the terrible moment at hand. The animal advanced with a menacing growl and picked up its stick again as it closed in on her, with its horrifying screeches filling the air.
Makwa!
She cowered down by the roots of the tree. Time slowed as he watched her pleading eyes move from his own to return to the monster before her. As the moment became a point of stillness, he knew with absolute clarity what was going to happen if someone didn't do something right then. Getting help was not an option, and neither was running, not if Shemna was going to live. The beast was going to kill Shemna, and if he didn't think of something fast, he would have to remember for the rest of his life how he had watched while she died. In the center of his heart, he heard a single word in a voice he craved, spoken as a whisper on the wind.
Choose.
Father,
he thought in response. He felt his claws slide out of his fingertips as he gripped his spear. He saw the terror in Shimna's eyes as the animal lifted its makeshift club to end her, and something in him changed then and there. He didn't know what was happening, but that wouldn't stop him now. He would save Shemna or share her fate. The choice was made. He dashed forward with his spear in his hands and a vicious snarl flowing from his mouth as his lips drew back. Time seemed to ooze along for him as part of him stood by and watched his own actions in terrified disbelief, all the while screaming for him to turn back. His mind was awhirl with fear. This was madness. This was suicide. He couldn't do this. He couldn't save himself, let alone her. Why was he running toward death? Against this stood his heart and the animal inside it, pushing him onward with a roar that terrified the frightened little boy within him every bit as much as the monster before him. The danger didn't matter, was irrelevant to his being and purpose as the Creator intended. How could he possibly do anything but rise up and fight for Shemna? He would save her, or he would die. Maybe both. That was all that really mattered now, and this was happening, one way or another. Time snapped back into place, and the Fazuga glanced over its shoulder. It growled and swung the club in a backhanded attack on Makwa. Even though he tried to avoid it, Makwa caught the end of the animal's broken-off club in his chest. His armor protected him from the pointy edges of the broken-off wood, but did very little to soften the blow. The air was driven from him, and he staggered back. He looked on in horror as the animal took another swipe at him, this time with long, black, curved claws. Pain rushed through him as the claws caught him in the face and jerked his head to the side from the impact that drove two of those claws to the bone. Makwa swirled, came down hard in the grass, and felt the warmth of the blood flowing from cuts over his right eye and an inch below it on his cheek. His head was swimming and throbbing, and his neck ached from the jerk of the blow. He gasped as he tried to force air into his lungs. Darkness started to close around him, and the world went dull as sounds became muddled. He heard a muffled booming in the distance, and then another scream from Shemna as the Fazuga turned back to her. She edged upward with her back pressed to the tree. He watched her, and she seemed so far away. The whole world seemed so far away. Time slowed almost to a crawl. Makwa didn't know how, but the image of her looking down past the animal at him and screaming for her life did something in him that gave him strength. He felt her eyes plead with him and beg for him to be all right, and to get up as he lay there limp in the grass. Whatever the mad fire was that burned in his heart, it grew under the touch of her eyes, setting ablaze all the will he had. With a grunt, he pushed up to his elbows and felt himself rise from the ground. He could hear his heartbeat pounding in his ears, and he tasted his own blood when his tongue washed over his muzzle. The Fazuga snorted at him and turned to bare its teeth at Shemna. Shemna yelped.
This isn't over. Not until I'm dead.
He thought. He leaned on his spear and pushed to rise to his feet. The club came up. Shemna screamed his name. Before the Fazuga could strike, Makwa did. He took a few lurching steps and snarled as he whipped the spear down and then upward, plunging it into the beast's left side. The moment before he was on the Fazuga, it turned its head to look. There was a question and fear in its eyes as Makwa's weapon slammed upward into its chest. It spat blood and turned to sink its fangs into his shoulder. He could feel the tips through his armor, and the pressure grew. Those jaws could crush bones if given the chance. Makwa knew with absolute certainty that he was going to die. He felt a growl flow from his mouth against agony, as his eyes narrowed in a lucid moment. He wouldn't die in vain. He refused to. No matter what, his life would mean something to someone, even if he was no longer around to see it.
For you, Shimna,
he thought. With all his remaining strength, he twisted his spear. A screech erupted around Makwa's shoulder as the spearhead turned in the Fazuga's chest. His hands were wet with blood, and he could feel it flowing inside and outside of his armor. He struggled to remain standing and winced, his eyes moving to look down at all that blood. Too much blood. And then up at Shimna. Shimna was safe against the tree when he looked up, and her eyes were wide as she looked into his and called his name, her hand outstretched in his direction as she steadied herself with claws in the bark. She spoke, but there was no sound to her words. Darkness closed in around him as he fell back with the dying Fazuga atop him and its jaws still clamped to his shoulder. The last thing he saw before the sudden night took him was a large tree being crushed aside and Cooley's head bursting into the clearing as the Tortanga bellowed a faraway roar of anger.